Buddhist Geeks. Seriously Buddhist, seriously geeky.
Episode 123, Dharma Music Can Sound Like Anything. This week we speak with Buddhist-inspired musician Ravena Michelson about what it means to make Dharma music our own. At the end of the interview, she shares one of her beautiful songs with us. Buddhist Geeks is supported largely by the generosity of our listeners. If you like what we're doing, please consider making a one-time or a small recurring donation by visiting buddhadharma20.com/donate.
Hello, Buddhist geeks. Coming at you again from Boulder, Colorado. And we're in my studio tonight. What day is this? What time is this right now? I don't know. But Vince Horn is here with me, and that makes everything okay.
Yeah, and we're also joined today by someone who's calling in from New Haven, Connecticut. And we're on the phone today with Ravena Michelson. Hi, Ravena.
Hi. Hi, guys.
It's good to have you with us. We heard a lot about you from our mutual friend, Danny Fisher. And we saw that he recently wrote an article in Tricycle Magazine about your music called Mindful Music. So we thought it'd be cool to catch up with you and talk to you about your music.
So I'm a big fan, especially of your little icon with the glasses.
Thank you. And just a little bit of background on Ravena. She is a singer-songwriter. She was actually classically trained as a cello musician. What do you call a cellist?
A cellist.
Hey, there we go. And recently, early 2000s, turned singer-songwriter. And now you produce a couple albums. The first was called Dharma Song. And the second, which recently released, is called Bloom. And you're also a Shambhala practitioner, and you study with Sakyam Mipam Rinpoche. So he's well known here around Boulder. Yeah. and definitely appreciated around here. Then jumping in a little bit to your actual music, I was struck when I went to your website, ravenam.com. The tagline is, Dharma music can sound like anything. And when I listened to the third album, Bloom, I really was struck by that there's a lot of lyrics and a lot of meaning behind the songs, which seemed dharmic and related to Dharma teachers and Dharma themes. And yet the genre or like the type of song really reminded me of like folk and bluegrass and different kinds of genres. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about why Dharma music can sound like anything and what that means.
You know, it's a risk of kind of moving into translation issues. I think it's a little bit important that as a convert community, we recognize that Dharma doesn't just mean what comes out of our chosen teacher's mouth, or that Buddhism doesn't just refer to a very small set of rituals and beliefs. That actually, when you step back, Dharma has been translated as everything from that which holds us back from non-virtuous actions to the truth of reality, the teachings of the truth. And then Buddhism kind of refers to a whole mess of things that if you step back and, you know, if someone gave you the opportunity to travel all around the Buddhist world over the last 2,500 years, I think we would all be shocked at what's been included under the rubric of quote-unquote Buddhism. And so when I said, oh, Dharma music can sound like anything, that was trying to me being a little bit playful and kind of trying to poke people and say, so you thought it would sound like this? Well, guess what? It can all sound like this a little bit. And that's in part why I did two versions of the song that Mipam Rinpoche asked me to set to music, Just a Seed Waiting to Grow. I did this very, like, dreamy and kind of sun-drenched version with cellos and voices and reverb up the wazoo. And then I did a just straight-up pop version that sounds like maybe early Breeders, if in my wildest dreams. I think it's important that we don't get like too attached to whatever our idea of Dharma is or whatever our idea of music is. I mean, I'm sure your parents at a certain point maybe said, you know, you're music these days, or that's not music. How many times have we heard in the last maybe it was more in the 80s, early 90s that people would say, you know, rap isn't music. And today, of course, we accept, you know, hip hop and rap as completely part of the musical landscape of the United States. And so this is just kind of poking people a little bit to say, well, can it sound like anything? Or is it supposed to sound a certain way? I'm not talking about content. but just in terms of sound. One of the movements that I am really interested in and I love watching documentaries about and listening to is gospel music. And there was so much struggle with a lot of earlier gospel musicians about whether they could do secular music but still bring that kind of devotional gospel feel to it. And I don't know if that question has necessarily been resolved, since we still have this genre that's called gospel and then we have non-gospel music. But this question has been around forever, I think.
Yeah, and then there's the whole thing of Christian rock becoming really popular, which is connected with that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I will admit that I don't think I've ever heard Christian rock that I was aware of. I mean, as a classically trained musician, holy mackerel, you know, you play a whole bunch of Mozart Requiems and Vivaldi Glorias, and that's some of the most, to me, beautiful music in the world, or Bach cantatas, and those are all, you know, in praise of God and the Lord and Jesus Christ. And I mean, if that's not kind of religious music, but today we don't necessarily identify it very overtly as Christian music. We identify it as classical music.
Well, yeah. Well, one thing I love that you're doing is you're a Tibetan practitioner and you're aware of the art integration with the teachings, you know, the paintings and music. It's a very, very big part of practice and the path. And so I think it's great that a musician like yourself, you're creating music in the Western context, because we don't have that much of it actually so far. That's one thing that's kind of, for me, been lacking as a musician and myself, that I want to hear more expressions that are taking roots from the Tibetan culture, but are uniquely our own.
Or not even, you know, Tibetan culture, but just overall any Buddhist culture,
because
obviously, you know, all these places are convert places, although they converted, you know, 1,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago.
Right.
But I felt very strongly when I met Nyingma Rinpoche. I mean, I totally fell in love, but one of the reasons I fell in love is that he spoke English in a way that I speak English. He made jokes the way I make jokes. There was so much identification that I felt that a lot of the exoticism that I had seen in other Buddhist situations dropped away. Because I had spent time in Bodh Gaya, you know, trying to learn about the origins of Buddhism, you know, years before I met Nyingma Rinpoche. And so I had seen a lot of kind of, oh my God, it's a human being draped in like saffron cloth. I must go like lick their feet, without any understanding of, well, you know, what is virtue? Is that just happens to be what he's wearing today? Like, what's going on? And then to meet Nyingma Rinpoche, who is this combination of incredible practitioner, but also, you know, he spent the majority of his life in the West. And so when I set out to do music, well, when he actually kind of like nudged me or kind of punched me in the kidneys to go do music, this type of music, it didn't really occur to me to be like, okay, now I've got to learn some crazy Asian languages because that's what Buddhism is. It, you know, to me, no, not so much.
Right.
For the record, I wish I did know. I wish I were fluent in all those languages, but not that I'd write music in them.
Right. So a few of your songs directly relate to some famous Tibetan women and practitioners and teachers, like Machik Labdrone and Yeshe Tsogyul. So could you say a little bit about the songs that you wrote and about these women?
Sure. Machik Labdrone is this just incredible Tibetan female practitioner, and she lived around, she's actually a contemporary of Milarepa. She's a little bit younger, so that's 11th and 12th centuries in Tibet. And some consider her to be the founder of the Mahamudra Chud lineage, which is this particular lineage of practice that deals with cutting through these particular four demons, kind of the biggest and the scariest demon being that of ego. And I mean, you've talked to some of the great Western experts on Machik and Chud, but in Sarah Harding, and then Sulcha Malayane is the one that really brought Machik's story to the West in her book, Women of Wisdom, where she translated her Namtar, or sacred biography. Mm-hmm. And I just became pretty much obsessed with Machik. I had a there was something about her story, the fact that, you know, she had this miraculous birth, I can't relate to that. But then she went on and through her own achievements became this really remarkable practitioner. She goes on and she develops this system of teachings, and she ends up debating with 500 panditas sent from Bodh Gaya because they say, well, listen, at this point, all the Buddhist Dharma has come from India, and now you're saying that there's Buddhist Dharma coming from Tibet. We don't know if we buy this. Then she beats them and wins them all over, and she has a concert, and she has three kids, and then she takes off to do retreat, and her story is just ridiculous. And she lives to be 99 years old, and Ma Chig sang a lot. I have no idea how well her story or her songs were preserved. I'm not sure that's knowable, but we have songs that are purported to be sung by Ma Chig Lebdrun. So I've written a couple of songs about her. One is called Ma Chig, and that's on Blam, and that's just this really, like, I was really heartbroken. My fiance had left me. I was a puddle of tears and dismay, and I had just dropped out of my graduate program. And so I was just wondering, Ma Chig, did you ever have any regrets? Basically, did you ever regret leaving your husband and kids to go to a retreat? Did you ever regret, whatever? That's the refrain, Ma Chig Lebdrun. Did you ever have any regrets? And then the other song is called Adrin, and that's kind of reciting her name. She was called many different names throughout her life, and then interspersed with the kind of calling out of her names, which is, very devotional, calling the guru from afar activity. I use a kind of an adapted refrain from her final song where she talks about the supreme view, supreme meditation, supreme activity. Every time I do a concert and I sing those songs, I don't do them at every concert, I always talk about her and talk about her life story and try to get people enthusiastic about learning about some of our great female practitioners, some of our lineage mothers.
Yeah, that seems like something that is really necessary and needed, considering that so many women that are interested in Buddhism don't have a ton of people like that to look to and say, hey, what does this look like when a woman wakes up and isn't during the awakening process? Like, how does that actually manifest? So I think that's just beautiful.
And I think the more we study, we find that actually there are a whole bunch of these women, but their stories weren't, A, recorded as well or thoroughly, or their stories were only passed down to, maybe their female descendants. And so you have to end up at that particular tiny monastery, nunnery X, Y, and Z, and to discover the story. And also, frankly, in our culture, it's almost considered a sin to be a single woman who doesn't have children. And so there's something in Ma Chig choosing to leave her married state or her consort state with Topa Bhadra, who was her chosen consort partner, and choosing to leave her kids, that is just so completely conception-breaking and mind-blowing. Because today we consider that almost like a crime to, like, leave your kids and family, and she chose to go off and do retreat.
Right, similar
Ma
to the
was a tough cookie.
Yeah, similar to the Buddha who did essentially this.
Yes,
we're told the same
yes,
thing.
Exactly, and you still hear people who really get fired up. The Buddha left his infant child and his wife, and people ask me that. I'm like, I can't answer that. But theoretically, there are things that are, dare I say it, more important than family.
Interesting. Well, we'll see if we get we'll get some interesting emails about that, I hope.
I guess I do. I mean, I'm not married. I don't have kids. And part of me is terrified of that idea because I love being able to pick up and go on retreat.
Mm-hmm. So we wanted to end this conversation. It seemed like it'd be a shame not to let people hear a bit of your music. So we wanted to end with this beautiful song from Dharma Song called Kiki Soso. And before we go into that, I was wondering if you could say a little bit about the song and kind of what's the significance of it for you.
It's based on the chant that's done both in parts of Tibetan culture, and particularly in Shambhala Buddhism, Kiki Soso Ashe La Jelo Taksen Kinjuk Dierke. And this is a chant that's done, in short, to raise your winged horse or your lungta. And I guess the way I tend to explain it in context is, this is confidence in your true nature. This is confidence utterly beyond any sense of aggression. This is confidence not based on how thin you are or how rich you are or how much you adore your boyfriend or your boyfriend adores you or blah, 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 blah. That's completely missing the point. This is confidence based, you know, on that completely stainless, birthless, deathless nature that we all get or have. And I did it just, not only it's done, chiki, so, ashe, but I set this more to kind of like a galloping horse rhythm. Kiki, so, ashe, no, dia, no, taksin, kenda, di, okay. And then I layered it on up. So there are, I think, 7 voices. And then I'm a little obsessed, you can tell, with calling the guru's name from afar. So Gawe Dorje is one of the names Mipam Rinpoche, I guess, was called as a child. So that's the name that I'm calling. And then it shifts into the second part of the song, which is the refrain, I ride on your wind. And that's based on the idea that whenever you study with a qualified teacher, you're in part riding on the wind of their blessings. That I don't know if you guys have ever had the experience where you go and you receive a teaching from somebody and you're like, I get that. And then like 15 minutes later, when it's all over, you're like, wait a minute, what am I supposed to do? I'm confused. And part of that, they say, is the blessings coming through, that kind of their understanding extended to you. And then on top of that, I just sang what was on my mind, which was my continual issue, which is that I didn't listen to what you had to say. I didn't listen. I will try. I've never felt like I actually have been able ever to listen or follow the Buddhist teachings, although I try. Trying failure. So that's sort of what the whole song is about. It's like a confidence, heartbreak, falling in love, failure trying song.
Kiki, Thank you.